I'm Madeline Brand. On this Memorial Day, we have a special treat for you. A recent debate with some of the leading candidates to be the next mayor of Los Angeles talking about one thing, homelessness. Here's the debate, which was taped recently in front of a live audience.
From KCRW and Los Angeles Times, welcome to LA's big debate, homelessness.
Voters have identified homelessness as the top issue for LA's next mayor, so tonight, we're here at KCRW's Annenberg Performance Studio with some of the candidates for that job, and we're going to be discussing that issue and only that issue.
We're your hosts for tonight. I'm Gustavo Arellano, columnist for Los Angeles Times and also host of the podcast The Times, daily news from the LA Times.
And I'm Anna Scott, KCRW's housing and homelessness reporter.
And we have three of the major candidates for mayor with us. Please hold your applause until everyone is introduced. Right next to me is Karen Bass. She's a Congress member representing California's 37th district. Kevin De Leon is in the middle. He's an LA City Council member representing the 14th district. And on the left, Gina Viola, community organizer, activist, and business owner. Everyone, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
We've received questions for the candidates ahead of the debate, including from some Angelenos experiencing homelessness. So you'll hear those throughout the discussion.
The folks on this stage, they've all demonstrated some support for their candidacies, including through polling. Since we settled on the lineup, though, two of the candidates that we originally invited, Mike Feer and Joe Buscaino, they dropped out of the race. One of the remaining candidates, real estate developer Rick Russo, he was invited several times but declined to be part of this important conversation. He's probably filming a television commercial somewhere.
Yes. He's busy. So with all of that said, we'll get started with the candidates who are here. And to kick it off, we're going to ask each of you to respond to the following statement. I think we'll start at this end. Housing is a human right. Why yes or why no?
I do think housing is a human right, just like I think the right to food, shelter, education, health care are all human rights. And when we live in the richest country in the history of the world, there's just no excuse for us not to have enough housing, education, healthcare, et cetera, for our population.
I concur as well, 100%, that housing is a universal right. It's a human right. This is one of the wealthiest cities on planet Earth, the city of LA. The state of California is the fifth largest economy on planet Earth. Right. And of course, the US, as Karen just mentioned a few moments ago, is the most powerful economy in the history of humanity. The very fact that we have more than 41,000 people living on our streets, our sidewalks, our alleyways, in their cars, in our parks, leaves us with a profound, indelible mark of shame. Obviously, we have embedded within our economic systems deep inequities that has had a profound impact on working people, but in particular, people of color in Southern California. In Los Angeles, and that has become much more polarized, especially with the coronavirus. So I think that whoever becomes the next mayor clearly has to move heaven and earth to make sure that we can provide accessibility, affordability to those who are very low income and middle income, and obviously those who are currently unhoused.
Absolutely, housing is a human right. And until we change policies to reflect that fact, we will continue to have people living on our streets. We can say housing is a human right, but if we don't do anything to change the policies, that, you know, U.S. housing policy is deeply baked in racism. It was created for white wealth building while extracting wealth from Black people in particular and people of color in general. So we need to not only say housing is a human right, but we need to make housing a human right. That's the first step to solving this crisis.
It's an easy question to answer. How do you think politicians in Los Angeles have dropped the ball on that, on something that's so supposedly fundamentally a right?
By not having housing first policies, right? We send out outreach workers to deliver meals, to check on people, but we don't have housing for them. We have very limited transitional places for people to sleep, but we don't have anywhere for them to end up eventually. And until we decide that we're going to put housing first as the first priority to tackle this crisis, we'll just keep spinning our wheels.
Quick lightning round. If you have to boil it down to one thing, we'll start with the council member. What's the most important action you would take as mayor on this issue? And just one thing, we have the rest of the conversation go get into things. And not just one thing, but in one sentence.
The first thing I do as chief executive of the second largest city in America is to do what I'm doing right now, which is to house the unhoused. We can move heaven and earth.
That's one sentence. One sentence.
And when you say house, do you mean house or shelter or both?
It's a combination thereof, of both short-term, interim, as well as permanent housing.
Okay.
Representative, your one sentence.
I would declare a state of emergency locally and push for a state of emergency nationally.
Okay, wait, a quick follow-up though.
Mm-hmm.
So state of emergency would give you the power to commandeer properties. It would allow you to temporarily rezone some properties, wouldn't bring in any more money.
Exactly.
How would you take advantage of that state of emergency?
I appreciate you asking the question. That's exactly why I don't think a state of emergency locally is enough. There needs to be a federal state of emergency. The bottom line is that we have to have a whole of government approach. And I think that's one of the things that has failed. I think that we have had an attitude in the city, the county, the state, and the federal government is that we're going to reduce this problem. I think the attitude has to be that we're going to end this problem, that we have to have enough housing in Los Angeles and everywhere else to deal with our population. A federal state of emergency will allow a relaxation of several federal regulations that have to be relaxed, which we can talk about in a minute.
We'll get
but it will also provide resources. A FEMA-style response, and what brings about a FEMA-style response is a state of emergency from the federal government.
And I know we said one sentence, and now I'm asking follow-ups that are requiring more, but we'll try to ensure equal time, even though we don't have individual clocks, but we'll do our best. But Gina?
The first thing I would do is assemble a paid council of unhoused people. We need to hear from unhoused people directly what they need.
Sorry. But following up on that, so bringing in unhoused people to get into that issue, why?
Because I've learned from working with the unhoused people directly what they truly want and need from us to be successful. There's no way for us living in homes to know what's best for those folks. And, you know, through my work with Streetwatch and my regular connection with my unhoused neighbors, I've learned far more about what the needs are than from LASA or any other agency telling me what they think the unhoused need.
Kevin, do you see this? Sorry, council member. Do you see KDL, right?
Yeah, KDL.
In this, you know, do you see the current council right now having that perspective that Gina just talked about, talking to folks?
I've been on the council now for 1 year and 6 months, and it's been very eye-opening. On one end, I will say that the council members, by far and large, are very knowledgeable on this issue, mm-hmm. more so than any elected official in the country, to be quite honest with you. What has lacked has been a coherent vision. You can't do it piecemeal, district mm-hmm. by district. You have 15 districts. This is a city of 4 million. Some districts have more unhoused neighbors than others, but a piecemeal approach simply doesn't work. You need a coherent vision for the entire city of LA. And I will give credit because their knowledge is deep. It's steep without question, more so than the state Senate, more so than the state assembly, even members of Congress, I would say even county board supervisors. But the question becomes, you have so many levers of power, the city, the county, the state, as well as the federal government. And they simply haven't worked well together. Mm-hmm. They've actually been very disjointed. They've been misaligned. And we have wasted, you know, tens of billions of dollars. We have to deal with the issue, what's in the immediate, which is housing. And it's a combination of both interim as well as permanent housing. But let me say this, and it's a little contrasting because I just don't have the faith that there will ever be a federal state of emergency on the issue of homelessness. And the mm-hmm. reason why I say that is climate change is an existential threat to humanity as we know it today. Yet there's been no action, either symbolically or, you know, federal action, you know, legislatively or executively through the White House. The issue of immigration reform, it's been with us now for going on 40 years. It hasn't happened. So I just don't see it in the foreseeable future at the federal level, given the dynamics, which Kevin understands well, being mm-hmm. right in the middle of it, you know, between the Republicans and the Democrats, an executive branch, unilateral decision by the president, Joseph Biden. I doubt it highly that there will be a federal emergency.
Do you want to respond to that quickly?
Sure. You are in part absolutely right. If we had to deal with it legislatively, you're right on target. Where I do have faith, though, is that we have an administration that is number one, committed on day one to equity and understands this issue and is willing to move on it. But here's the catch, because in order for there to be a federal state of emergency, it has to be declared statewide by the governor. So one of the approaches that I want to use is certainly to appeal to the governor to deal with the administration, but also to assemble a number of mayors. And I've already been reaching out to mayors now, especially the top 10 in terms of homelessness. I would be very active in the U.S. Conference of Mayors. And there are things that the administration can do. Some of the regulations, you know, for example, the Secretary of Veteran Affairs, McDonald, was at the VA, and he has pledged to house 1,500 more people by the end of the year. I was in conversation with him, went to the VA with him, and he's been able to relax some regulations to get folks housed. So if there's the political will, the individual secretaries, there are things that they can do. Now, there is a sum that would have to be dealt with legislatively, but there are some regulations. I'll use an example of HUD. For instance, there's vouchers. You know, we have thousands of vouchers here, but we're not able to access and use all of them because there's regulations there. Some of those can be relaxed without having legislation. But if I had to depend completely on legislation, I'm right with you.
Can I push back?
Yeah, Gina.
Yeah. Can I push back on that a little bit?
Sure.
So Gavin Newsom created a homelessness task force about 3 years ago, and it was a bunch of mayors and government officials. What was missing from that task force were organizations. Mm-hmm. It was solely government. So where has that organization? Mark Ridley Thomas was the president of that task force, and I've seen no accomplishments from it at all. And again, you talk about the council members knowing more about this issue. Houselessness is out of control. We have almost 60,000 people sleeping on the street.
Right.
So again, I don't hear any discussion about involving the unhoused and how we make our way out of this.
Well, I would like to bring the unhoused into this conversation because I've been collecting some questions from unhoused Angelenos.
We'll
give you 30 seconds.
Just very quickly, and this is where lies the conundrum, because Secretary of the VA did come out to West LA. It took him years, you know, even before him, before the administration, the previous administrations, whether it's Barack Obama or then President Donald Trump. And the fact that then Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger actually had to donate out of his own pocket for tiny homes on federal property and the VA just shows you that the executive branch and the various cabinet positions are not responding with the sense of urgency that it deserves today.
Yeah, on this discussion of the VA, one of the unhoused people that I spoke with in preparation for this is a veteran who's living in a temporary shelter on the West Los Angeles VA campus. His name is Michael Williams. He's a Navy veteran. And you guys are really already addressing his question, but this is, you know, one of the things that he wanted to know is what Garcetti, when he was campaigning, he promised to end veteran homelessness. What are you going to do to push things at the federal level, to push things forward on actually getting that done in LA?
You know, and I mean, and here's the bottom line. I agree with you. There are weaknesses there. The bottom line, though, is that we cannot address this problem. We can't solve this problem unless we have federal support. So we have to push and make sure that we have that, because you get funding from the federal government, but you also get a relaxation of regulations. But you also have to have the city and the county working hand in glove. And one of the structural problems, and this is something that could be dealt with on the local level, frankly, is that the city and the county do not want to work together. Perfect example is the settlement of the lawsuit that just happened with the LA Alliance. So the city settled, and please tell me if I'm wrong, but the city settled that basically said, yeah, we'll give housing, or rather shelters, but only to people who are economically unhoused. If you are unhoused with substance abuse or mental illness, you have to go to the county. That's madness. I mean, if the Alliance sued the city and the county, should have settled together. So I'm fortunate. I have deep relationships with each of the supervisors, as well as I've been working with the county for many, many years because of the policy areas I work on. But I also agree with Gina, because to me, the best policy is crafted when you have people who are most immediately impacted at the table. And I believe that that's absolutely critical.
I'd like to get the voice of an unhoused Angelino into the conversation. This this first question that we're going to hear from an unhoused person in LA is from Maria Demetrio in Koreatown. And she starts out here, what you're about to hear, she's going to start by talking about what her rent used to be. So let's hear that now.
The last apartment I had on Hobart between 5th and 6th, 718. Do you know how much that same unit is? $1,200. Still looks the same way. Why? Why is rent so high?
So, Gina, we'll start with you. Why is rent so high? And I'm going to add, what will you do about it?
So 75% of our rental stock now is owned by corporate and big landlords. And that's the problem, right? We have weakened our rent control. We barely have rent control. The affordable units we do have sunsets, right? Look at what's happening in Chinatown with the Hillside Villa. Those elderly tenants, their rents tripled overnight because there is no protection in perpetuity with the affordable housing unit. So we absolutely need to demand that all development have the maximum amount of affordable units in perpetuity, not with these 10 years or 20 years, because that's what we're seeing. We're seeing rents triple overnight. Things like Airbnb that were created to share your space, right? An extra room in your house, an in-law unit, has turned into big business. There's lots and lots of vacant apartments and houses for Airbnb now. So that's what Maria is competing with.
And so how would you do it? How would you ensure that everything that gets built has a maximum amount of affordable housing?
Or even, how
if it's
do you
not getting public
that?
Financing?
How do you dismantle
that?
Well,
systems,
we have to
Airbnb,
go back to rent control. We have to go back to solid rent control in the city, and we have to do a vacancy tax, right? Mike Bonin put forth the vacancy tax right at the beginning of the pandemic, and city council shelved it for 2 years. Why would you shelve a vacancy tax for 2 years for something that could be very helpful? We have to disincentivize people for letting units sit empty.
Right, Kevin, do you want to pick up on that?
Yeah, what you have to do, plain and simple, is the next leader of the city of LA, and what I'll do is mandate affordable housing. It's just that simple. Whether it's very low income, whether it's low income, middle income, or workforce housing. If you don't mandate it, if you allow the market forces to dictate the rules, you're never going to win.
But mandate it through inclusionary zoning or what?
Inclusionary zoning, exactly. You know, what that magic number is, whether it's 20, 25, whether it's 30, 35%. Because if you don't do it, today we have we have a surplus of 75,000 plus luxury market unit rates, right? Units that are sitting empty right now. Anyone in this audience can go out there and rent if you want. The question is, can you afford it at above market rate? And they're sitting vacant right now. So you have to mandate through inclusionary, you know, with developers. Cool. If you don't mandate it, it's not going to happen.
But you're on the city council now. If it's so easy, you just mandate it. Why haven't you done it already?
Well, I actually am doing it. And believe it or not, for downtown Los Angeles, because that's the area that I have. So in the 2040 DTA plan, we expect maybe about 100,000 new residents in downtown LA. So that's what I'm actually pushing for, mandate inclusionary within downtown Los Angeles.
Representative Bezzi, you were nodding your head now.
Yeah, well, it's just that I don't think inclusionary zoning, especially, it's not that I disagree with it, I just don't think that it is enough at all to address the significant problem that we have. I mean, I know the council has to turn in a new plan, right, for the 250,000 affordable units to the state, that the state rejected the plan.
The 456,000.
Yeah, well, then I know the state rejected one of the plans, and you guys have to fix that. I think that we have an absolute emergency right now, and that we have to deal with the 60,000 people who are unhoused, and that I think that if you come to me and say you are going to build housing, especially for people that are unhoused, then you need to be absolutely fast-tracked, not go to the front of the line. There needs to be a completely separate line and a completely separate process so that we can get housing built. So I worry that the inclusionary zoning model is just insufficient. We need to look at every possible way to build housing. And one of the first areas that I would look at would be land that is owned by the government on every level. There's hundreds of acres of land, and some of it is not, you know, appropriate, but there is some that is appropriate. And we need to build, we need to increase the supply.
Let me add that, obviously, as you accelerate permitting process with planning, mm-hmm. building and safety, LADWP, LA Fire Department, that's a given, because the next mayor will curate each general manager, and they have to work with his or her vision. Right. So you have to accelerate that process. However, if you don't mandate affordable housing, it doesn't happen miraculously, because the market forces have already dictated, if they go unchecked, the market forces always win. That's just been the history of this country. And that's why today you have a major supply of luxury above rate housing. And coincidentally, you have 41,000 people within the city of LA living on the streets. And you have hundreds of thousands of people right now who are barely holding on by a shoestring right now. Eviction moratorium, they would be living on the streets today. The eviction moratorium expired, sunsetted at the state level. They weren't able to pass it in Congress at the national level. Joe Biden, through an executive order, tried to extend the eviction moratorium. The U.S. Supreme Court overruled the President of the United States. We're the only major metropolitan city in America that still has an eviction moratorium. So if we didn't have it, you'd still have a tsunami of more folks falling into homelessness. So therefore, on the affordability side, when it comes to rentals, you have to mandate it. If you don't mandate it, the developers will dictate the supply in the city of LA.
Well, then what are you going to do in the short term? Mandating it, having an inclusionary zoning policy, I imagine that takes time to implement. You're talking about new projects that are coming online that take time to build. If this deadline is coming up, this is a question for all of you, then what are you going to do when that moratorium expires to stop people from falling into homelessness?
We need to eminent domain. We need to eminent domain empty buildings. We have lots of them. We have hotels, we have motels, we have all of the housing stock on the 710 freeway that shame on the state of California has owned for decades and let sit empty. I mean, this is just outrageous.
But that's also a long process. Yes. Eminent domain, takes a while, that you'll probably get lawsuits, pushback. What do you do about this moratorium that's going to expire?
Well, I think in the interim, when you're eminent domaining, we move people in. We take action, right? It's time for action. I know it sounds outrageous, but that's what the reclaimers did in El Sereno, right? They very successfully took a house because it was a pandemic and folks were living in congregate shelters or in congregate areas, and a couple of people were getting very sick. They took a home. They then took 11 more. They're now working with the state for a community land trust. These are things we need to do as a city. Why rely on activists to have to break a law and do it?
May I say something? Because that's actually in my district in City 14, and those abandoned homes were actually not habitable. They had rats. They have vector in there.
Not all of them.
They were very unsafe. But the key thing is this. We passed legislation because, as we all know, they wanted to build the 710 freeway, the extension. This is during our time,
yes,
right?
It was.
Build a freeway through a community.
Yep.
At the end of the day, I was there. I put the final nail in that coffin where there will never be an extension through that community at all whatsoever.
But hold on,
just one sec. Now there is all that stock. Now we can legally secure that housing right now. And in this year's budget, I've actually put money to purchase all of those units. Now the key thing is the law says now that we can purchase the units at the value they were originally purchased at. In the 60s as well as the 70s. Can't purchase it in today's valuation. So we have ability now to actually purchase those empty properties and abandoned homes and convert them into what we all want, which is affordable housing. This is a very unique opportunity. There's nowhere, San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose, San Diego, Central Valley, Inland Empire, there's nowhere in the state of California that has such a large portfolio of real estate assets that, to your point, Gina, right, has been abandoned, government-owned by Caltrans specifically. Now we have that opportunity. It'll be one of the largest affordable housing, not units, but developments in the history of the state of California, and that's within reach.
Abandoned homes. Representative Bass, what about this eviction moratorium that's coming up that's going to expire?
Well, first of all, we need to do what we can to extend it, but I'm hoping, and I would imagine that you guys are doing that at the city level, which is getting money from the state. Kevin and I were in the state legislature at the worst time, but now with a budget surplus of what, $97 billion, it should be able to be extended. And then on the federal level, you know, of course, what we're trying to do is to provide an extra rescue package because we're still not out of COVID. You know, when COVID first started, I chaired the Congressional Black Caucus, and I brought together the Black Caucus, Hispanic, Asian, and Native American caucuses, and we all joined forces and fought for and won billions of dollars that would address the disproportionate impact that COVID was having, both health and economically. And so some of the resources that we sent to the city that provided the resources for the tiny homes, room key and home key, we need to continue that. So I'm hoping that the city would get money from the state to continue the moratorium. But we have to also address, you know, Gina, you mentioned the corporate ownership, but there are a lot of apartments that are owned by just families. I mean, that's, you know, mom and pop. And we have to make sure that they don't default. So we need to provide assistance for the owners as well, because the worst thing in the world would be to protect the renter and then the owner loses their property. And we don't want that to happen.
Continuing, Congresswoman, with you, on a more personal level, what's the closest encampment to where you live, and how does that affect your perspective on all of this? And on that note, we also have audience questions about what you've, and this is a question I want all of you to answer, what all of you have done to personally meet with unhoused neighbors, and so please address that as well.
I think the closest encampment is on La Brea. Would be the closest encampment to me, to where I live.
Is it down the street, couple blocks, somewhere?
It's a few blocks away, yes.
Do you interact with the people there?
I don't interact with the people in that particular encampment, no, but I've interacted with homeless people for many, many years, many years. I worked as a physician assistant at County General Hospital, and my patients every day were unhoused. When I started Community Coalition in 1990, because we were trying to address the problem then. In 1993, we were trying to take over motels because in the 8th City Council District, there were 54 motels and no tourists. And we thought that that would be a great way to deal with that. So many of my staff were formerly unhoused. Many of my staff were formerly in their addiction or were gang involved or coming out of the criminal justice system. So I've had many years of involvement directly and indirectly with people who are unhoused.
Gina, how about you? What's the closest encampment?
So my closest large encampment was just banished under 4118. And I've lost track of several of the people that I've had relationships with for several years as a result of it. It's the one on Selma Avenue. And a fence has gone up because we're a city of fences now. They've made it wood with paint to look a little bit more palatable. But the tragedy is that I have built relationships with several people, not just myself, but others. We've built relationships with people, and we can't locate them now. Some of these people were close to being matched with housing. Some of these people were waiting on us for medical supplies, other things, and we can't find them. Others were put in Project Room Key, and the stories I'm learning about what's happening at Project Room Key, it's very carceral. You're not given a key. I don't know why they call it Project Room Key. They're supposed to have 60 seconds to answer their door. Folks just walk right in to their room, male or female. It's a very carceral solution right now, the way it is.
When did they take out that encampment?
I think it's been almost 3 months, about 2.5 months.
And do you ever think, like, when the day that that happened, how did you feel about it?
Horrible. I mean, it's tragic when it happens. When it happened at Echo Park, it was tragic. When it happened in Venice, it was tragic. I know it seems like a good solution for the public at large, but you don't realize the city has been dealing with human beings as though they're trash. They've been dealing with it with sanitation and police.
Kevin, what about in your district?
It's about 8 blocks from where I live, but the encampment no longer exists. They all have tiny homes right now, which is north of Colorado on Figueroa. All of them are actually very happy. They get 3 meals a day. They have their own locked door. They can enter as they wish. They have showers. They have bathrooms as well as washers and dryers. And I can tell you this, that a tiny home is a hell of a lot better than living out in a tent, sleeping on a cold slab of cement or asphalt, or for women who've been sexually violated on any given night, the only thing that protects them is a flimsy zipper. Because this is not theory, this is real life. And I can tell you, my engagement, and I engage with unhoused neighbors almost every single day. And I represent the largest concentration of unhoused people in the United States of America. And to put this in context, I inherited a district that has the largest number of unhoused neighbors in the city of LA. I've inherited a district that has the largest number of unhoused neighbors anywhere in America, except for three cities. New York City, Los Angeles in the aggregate, and Chicago. So I have more unhoused neighbors in City Council District 14 than the homeless populations in its totalities in the cities of Houston and Phoenix, the fourth and fifth largest cities in America. So to understand the magnitude of this crisis, we have to move with a sense of urgency. Right. And I can tell you this, when I engage with unhoused neighbors, they're desperate to get off the streets. Yeah. And like this, they want
right.
housing.
They're not service resistant.
They're not service resistant.
No, they're not.
Nine times out of ten,
they want to get
the
off the streets. But I know people who've been sexually assaulted in the tiny sheds.
Did you have that same sense of urgency when you were up in Sacramento? Or is it when you became council member, you saw the magnitude of what was before LA?
When I was in the state Senate, obviously a lot of folks know me for Senate Bill 100. My expertise is on clean, renewable energy. It's on climate. It's on the environment. But back in 2016, I moved forward a piece of legislation, which is No Place Like Home. Counties actually opposed me. LA County opposed me. I took $2 billion. I didn't raise taxes, personal income tax. I didn't raise parcel tax, sales tax. And I succeeded with Governor Jerry Brown to put inside the budget. We got sued. And then I made the decision, instead of going through all the courts, I made the decision to move forward a bill.
Awesome.
I got support from Republicans as well, too. And we placed it on the ballot. That was Proposition 2. That got that passed overwhelmingly, state of California, $2 billion, Prop 2 in 2018. As a result from that measure, that we have gotten $700 million that are coming down the pipeline right now just for LA County. And that money is to be utilized specifically for chronically homeless individuals who are severely mentally ill. And the reason why it was critical that we settle that lawsuit with LA Alliance is before I got to city council, the city of LA and the county have been on a litigation merry-go-round. Mm-hmm. Lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit, and no improvable gains. And we have tried incessantly to work with the county to sit down. Listen, we all have relationships with the county board of supervisors, all of us, some deeper than others. But at the end of the day, if they're not willing to settle, we have to move forward to deal with those who are lowest acuity, because LA County has $3 billion budget, not overall for LA County, $3 billion just for the mental health department. They need to start using that money to deal with our mentally ill, unhoused neighbors who are suffering desperately on the streets of LA.
As long as we don't move away from it being housing first, right?
No, I'm for housing first.
So the tiny sheds that you have you let the public in?
They're not sheds. I wouldn't characterize them as sheds.
They're smaller than a prison cell, and you're getting ready to double up on them. You're getting ready to put two in a shed, right?
The public, yes. The public has, we've had open houses.
And we're paying $3,200 per shed a month.
I wouldn't characterize it, Gina, as shed. And the reason why I say that
is
for
shed.
A human being who's been living on the streets every single day for years, if not for decades. It's a godsend.
If it was temporary, I might be able to go with you on that.
It is temporary.
But I know people who've been in them for a year. In CD15, they've been in the sheds for a year. They've been sexually assaulted there. They've had their belongings trashed. The sheds flood. It cannot be a permanent
solution.
Well, I can't
speak for CD15. You'd have to speak with the council member there.
Well, here's a quick follow-up about the tiny homes for you, and then we'll move on. But I know from reporting, one of the reasons that people sometimes are enthusiastic about them is the privacy over a congregate traditional shelter. But now your district is one of the city council districts that's starting to require people to double up in these 8x8 shelters. And so are you concerned about that these are not going to be an appealing option anymore?
No, because the doubling up, when you make the reference to double up, that only means if they're a couple. That only means that they want to do it, but it is not against
their
will.
That's not my understanding.
Well, nope. So let me correct the record for you right now. We're not putting folks together. Just, you know, you have to double up under one roof against your will. These are only couples. These are only relationships that exist. Folks can come together. If that doesn't exist, they cannot do that.
The bottom line is that we have to come up with a variety of solutions. And I do think that, you know, the goal, of course, is permanent supportive housing, no question. For those that need supportive housing, and not everybody does. Some people are just economically unhoused and they need a leg up, and that's fine. But we do have to address why people are unhoused to begin with. So get someone housed, but then why were they unhoused? Was it substance abuse? Was it mental illness? Was it some other chronic disease? Are they veterans? Are they a former foster youth? So I think my problem is that in this atmosphere right now, people are lumping the unhoused together as a monolith, as people who are service resistant, don't want to be inside. We have to break that mentality, but the county and the city absolutely have to work together. Because if people need services, you can't just hand them off. It has to be a united front and force of all of government working together.
What's a specific thing that you think LA Mayor Eric Garcetti did not do right on homelessness, and how would you do that differently?
Well, I think that really two areas that we haven't talked much about, and that's substance abuse and mental illness. We have to deal with that as an issue. And let me just give you an example. There is a facility, a hospital, St. Vincent on Beverly Boulevard. It can house 344 people. The problem is that the federal government has a limitation on how many people you can have in a facility who have substance abuse or mental illness. 16 is the maximum number. So that hospital is sitting completely empty. It's in pristine condition, and it's being used for film location. We need to have the federal government waive those two regulations. And by the way, that hospital, I don't know if the city has entertained it, but I know that the owner is willing to lease it to the city or the county. But that's a facility.
The owner of that facility is the owner of the Los Angeles Times.
Full disclosure.
A multi-billionaire who should actually be giving that piece of property.
So
to
he hasn't connected with you?
I've spoken with the council member of that district, and he says he will not return their phone calls.
Well, you know what? Yeah. He'll return mine. I'll connect up with you, okay?
I hope
and
so.
And I'll call Mitchell Farrell
and tell him, give it to us free.
Okay,
don't
all right.
Don't be charging taxpayers as a multi-billionaire.
Absolutely, that's fine.
When we're making these decisions about the tiny sheds, all of it, none of it was done with unhoused people in the room, right? This was something offered to them, so they've been learning as they've gone. They've been discovering there are things that are good, there are things that are bad, but you're not listening to that. You're deciding that you know best, you've put down these tiny sheds, it's much better than living in a tent, and that's that. We need to bring unhoused people in and hear from them what their experience is like in those sheds. Right?
You know, and I think
and it's something
be...
we can continually improve upon if it's a transitional solution.
No, I think
and
I agree.
And let's not lose sight of the question.
The reason
about
why I say this is that
Mayor Garcetti.
I've experienced,
oh, yeah, sorry.
You know, I've experienced homelessness in my early 20s. I slept, you know, on friends' couches. I slept in my car. I actually slept, you know, in the office where I worked at for 2 years. You know, when I grew up, we were always on the edge of homelessness, living, you know, renting a room in an already crowded house, renting a room at the bottom of a house in a basement. So experiencing homelessness and housing insecurity is something that I know extremely well at a very personal, deep level. So engagement, not being paternalistic or condescending right. with our unhoused neighbors, but also moving with a sense of urgency, because I believe if we can move heaven and earth to build football stadiums and basketball arenas, in shopping malls, then we can do the same thing for unhoused neighbors. And
so what's the specific thing that the current mayor, you think, did not do right? What would you do different?
I think that was, you were asking Karen that.
I think she answered.
She answered it already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're up.
No hablo inglés.
Pues habla en español entonces. Ándale. No trates de hacer algo así.
I can make some suggestions if you want.
What I would say is, I think what they did well, civic leaders as well as the mayor, politically, is they were able to persuade the electorate to tax themselves through a government bond, which is HHH. They were very successful. The execution of HHH is another thing. You can't have an average price point of $650,000, $700,000 per unit.
It's $580,000.
Closer to 580, 600, it all varies. But to your point, let's round it up to 600,000 on a per unit basis. 600,000, it's not a two bedroom, one bathroom, 1,000 square foot home. This is on a per unit basis.
The city
on hard
pays
costs.
Like 130,000 typically per unit.
But
right?
But it doesn't make a difference, because I know, you know, when you, it's called a stacking or blending financial plan. Getting federal tax credits, mm-hmm. getting state tax credits. That financial system doesn't work, because the housing edict for LA is, or the doctrine is, how do we spend the most money and how do we take the longest time to build housing for unhoused people? And that's why when it takes on average 5 years to open up that door and to have a family move in, That's why on the interim, you have to move very quickly because you can't let the perfect get in the way of the good. And for a lot of folks who live in a world of absolutes, in a theoretical world, there are people who are dying on the streets every single day. I don't believe it's either progressive as a Democrat or humane that we allow people to die and suffer in such misery because we're allowing the perfect to get in the way of the good.
How would you get it done faster and cheaper?
But to the point on our chief executive, our current mayor, Eric Garcetti, the price points should have been, you know, decreased quite dramatically on hard costs, on soft costs, architectural fees, structural engineering fees. It should have gone, what Karen and I agree, it should have gone to the straight of the line on the queue. VIP, concierge, it gets done in 1 month in terms of all the permitting process, LADWP, LA Fire Department, building and safety, as well as planning should have been working in concert with each other to accelerate the housing production. And it should have been done within a year. But the average is 5 years.
Yeah, Gina, as you know, as a one non-politician here, and the council member has already said, there's all these different competing agencies. Mm-hmm. You've used great metaphors of merry-go-round, different levers of power. You, as a non-politician, how do you cut through all of this? How do you cut through this Gordian knot?
The budget. The mayor has the say over the budget. And our budget is a moral document, and it says a lot about who we are as a city. The budget under Mayor Garcetti for the LAPD has increased 52% in the last 10 years. No other line item has seen that kind of increase. That's all that the city has prioritized over housing, over health care, over things that truly do keep us well and keep us safe. So that is something that needs to change. You know, the city's approach to houselessness, like I said earlier, has been with sanitation and with LAPD. There's no budget for housing. We have not made it a housing first. There's nothing in this budget that says housing is a human right. So if we're not starting there, we'll just keep spinning our wheels.
It may not say that, but I believe this is the first year the city is spending $1 billion on homelessness. So
But they're doing things like hiring outside agencies to come in, right? A whole nother agency showed up. I'll use Hollywood as an example, right? We have outreach agencies in Hollywood that know the folks living on the streets in Hollywood. They bring in a whole nother agency from San Francisco who know nothing about any of these residents who are living on the streets. So normally on a sweep day, I have at least 10 police officers standing around, close to 20 sanitation workers standing around. Now I have a whole new outreach agency of 10 or 12 people standing around. I literally think the first line item in those job descriptions is you must be able to stand around for many hours because that's essentially
that's
what the city.
Fair.
It's not fair, but I've lived it.
That's not.
I'm not saying regular trash pickup is like that, but I'm saying these sweeps, that's what they're like. Sanitation rolls in at 8:30. Everybody gets out and stands around for hours. Two or three people finally get a bucket and a rake and do a few things. They get back in the car and drive away before lunch. And I'm pretty sure they're all on an 8-hour day. This has been the reality. And I'm not saying I've seen this once. I'm saying I've seen this for years. For years.
Representative Bass, I want to ask you a specific question about a goal that you set of 15,000. So this is 15,000 beds or homes for people. Can you break that number down? How many temporary, how many permanent, and how would you get those built?
Sure. Well, first of all, as I mentioned, things have to be absolutely fast-tracked. One of the first things I would do would be to address the situation with vouchers, which is actually something I'm trying to work on now. So if the federal government sent 2,500 vouchers and we're only able to use, a few hundred because of restrictions, because the dollar amount is so low, it doesn't really meet the market here in Los Angeles. That's one thing. Fast-tracking the room key, the home key, making sure that we use adaptive reuse, commercial buildings that could be changed. I mentioned earlier that there's hundreds of acres of publicly owned property that I would build on immediately. My hope in bringing the federal government in also is FEMA. You know, one of the things I do in Congress is work overseas in foreign policy, and I've seen what our government can do when we want to. We just finished building all sorts of accommodations for Afghan refugees in Qatar. Why can't we utilize some of those resources here domestically? If we have hundreds of acres, why can't we build there? I do think we need temporary housing, but we also need to build permanent supportive housing. I would move people out of temporary housing as soon as possible. That would free up units that could be used for people coming off the street. I would also invest in a number of the organizations that hire people who are unhoused, train them as outreach workers to do the street outreach. A lot of this is already being done, but I don't believe it's ever really been supported to the scale that is needed to really address the problem.
The mayor, you know, the mayor's seat in Los Angeles has historically been weak compared to other places. So given that, and given all these different agencies, representative, how would you use your position to get as much power out of it as possible on this particular issue?
Well, I think the job is what you make it. If you decide that you are going to be a weak mayor, that's what you're going to be. But I agree with Kevin. It's about leadership. It's about decisive leadership. It's about setting a tone. I would bring in all of my general managers. They would be very clear what the vision is, what the goal is. They would be held accountable to those goals. Any agent, any department that touches homelessness would have to work together. So I think that there is a way that you can send a message. But I also believe, frankly, that we need public participation and public support. I don't believe as much power as elected officials might have, it's not enough. In order to deal with this issue, we have to have the city understand, meaning all Angelenos understand, that we are all invested in this problem.
How well do you think this current council did towards that, Gina?
Not at all. I mean, I'm sorry, but to do it in silos the way they have, like if you look at Council District 4, she's basically turned her entire staff into outreach workers because she's recognized that this is the issue of our time, right? So she has actually successfully, more of CD4 is on a path to permanent housing than any other district. Yes, 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 is on a path to permanent housing than anyone else. But it was slow. It was a slow process. She had outreach workers that, you know, turned her staff into outreach workers who made connections with people, who heard from the unhoused people what they needed, you know, much to the chagrin of many housed people who were calling and terrorizing her. Day after day, when are you going to get rid of these encampments? You know, they disappeared slowly, but they are on a path to housing, lots of them. You know, this is what we need to do citywide. And I think the mayor, you know, having the power to present the budget, to me, is not a weak mayor. That's a strong mayor, right? You get to present the budget. And I would adopt the People's Budget Los Angeles. I would have a participatory budgeting session in each of the 15 city council districts with the city council person. I plan to be a working mayor. I plan to go to city council meetings. I'm not just going to flip the switch on the city council, on the city hall, you know, lights, because that's kind of what the mayor does now, unfortunately. You know, I heard him say at the beginning of his term that homelessness was his biggest concern, and that was the thing he'd worked on since he was an adolescent, frankly, as a volunteer. And I'm astounded at how many times I've heard him say that and how what terrible condition this is in. So somebody has to have the political will at some point to hold everybody's feet to the fire, be it city council, be it a state that has a $97 billion budget surplus. A lot of that money came from Los Angeles. You'll be giving that back to us.
Let me add this.
I want to get to some, sorry, no, I'm going to cut you off because I've been informed by the producers that that Gina has had the least time to speak and you've had the most time so far. So I am going to.
Is that true? I feel like I've
been
talking a lot.
Yeah, I've been informed here. So I'm going to cut you off and just go to a new question that's a listener question because we've been asking
Karen
our audience
Gina tied
to submit
right
questions using their QR code. So I'm going to start fresh. Gina, try to even up the time here. What do you think of Governor Newsom's care courts proposal? This is the proposal that would allow court-ordered mental health or substance abuse treatment plans for people with severe
that
disorders.
That scares me immensely. What I hear from that are mandated people going to prison. That's what I hear. You know, we have a prison industrial complex in California that needs to be fed, and Los Angeles has been leading the way on decarceration, right? We've had Measure R, Measure J in LA County. We've had organizations like Dignity and Power Now, Curb, Justice LA. We have the biggest alternatives to incarceration in the county. So the jail population is actually going down. The prison population is actually going down. And what I worry with Newsom's mental health mandate is the plan is to fill these prisons back up with houseless folks. And it frightens me. I don't think people should be, you know, again, we need a housing first approach. Do people need resources? Absolutely. But they need a house first, not a jail cell.
Okay, council member, now you can have your turn. What do you think of it?
I think it's a good start. I think the fact that on any given night in Los Angeles, and who hasn't seen this, someone who's naked running down the street, screaming at the top of his or her lungs, having a psychotic break. And what happens? There's no mental health services there. And what happens? Folks call 911 because that's a reflexive move from folks, and LAPD shows up. And the LAPD, they do not have the training nor the expertise. And there is no facility for those individuals who are having severe psychotic breakdowns and living on the streets. And you go to Skid Row, and high acuity is especially high, you know, in Skid Row and throughout the city of LA. But it is inhumane and unfair for those who are severely mentally ill and now drug addicted with crystal meth and fentanyl to be living on the streets because they're not getting the treatment that they deserve and that they need. And they're not, this is not a step forward towards incarceration or prisons. That is completely inaccurate. And that's not what Governor Gavin Newsom is proposing at all whatsoever, to open up the prisons, you know, whether it be Vacaville, San Quentin, or Pelican Bay, and have folks who are severely mentally ill go into the prison system.
You know, as I mentioned, I worked at County Hospital. I worked in the emergency room. I took care of people who suffered from mental illness. And I just think it is a tragedy that people can be on the street profoundly mentally ill. It is clear they cannot take care of themselves, and we don't take care of them. We leave them on the street to die, essentially. When I was looking at officer-involved deaths, this is nationwide, after George Floyd's murder, I looked at about 100 deaths, and I would say 30 to 40% of them were police responding to mental health calls that they are not trained to do at all. And in fact, they increase and agitate the individual. So I do think that we need to deal with people who cannot take care of themselves. And right now, all we have is a 72-hour hold. That is not enough. We bring them in and then put them right back out on the street. Here's my concern about the governor's plan. I don't know where people are supposed to go. If they do the legislation without figuring out where people are going to be taken care of, I'm afraid it will result in what Gina said. We have to build the facilities. This is the problem that goes back, you know, to Reagan. When we deinstitutionalized people, we didn't build the community-based institutions that we committed to. So if that is not a part of the plan, I'm going to be very worried that the only institution that is prepared to take care of people today, take care of people, that's a very loose term, is county jail, and that's unacceptable.
But we're going to move on to the next question.
No, I know, but I'm saying, exactly right, which is why what my concern is that if this legislation goes through and they haven't figured it out, it's just like, and you know I fought for years on criminal justice reform and wanted to see people who shouldn't be held in prison released. But we didn't figure out where they were going to go, and so they got discharged from prison and given a tent.
The next question is from Diane M. Gonzalez. It's actually a callback to your days at COCO. One of the Ten Commandments say, love thy neighbor. Do you plan any dialogue with churches in Los Angeles to address and take immediate action to help the homeless community, beginning with safe parking for people sleeping in their automobiles?
Oh, absolutely. Already in dialogue. And also already in dialogue with people who are unhoused. I held a meeting a couple of weeks ago with a group of people that were unhoused. I think we have to look at all of the above. School campuses, church grounds. We have to have, again, if it's an emergency, if it's an earthquake, you pull out all stops. You say this has to end, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to end it.
I think this is a good moment for our very last question, which is from an unhoused Angelino who lives in the East Hollywood area. He goes by T, and he simply wants all of you to imagine yourselves in his shoes. So let's hear his question now.
Okay, so it's at 6 o'clock at night, and you just realize that you have no money and you have no place to go. What do you do? Where do you go?
Where do you go if you find yourself in that situation?
Well, you know, first of all, I would be absolutely positively terrified. But I think what I have and Angelinos who don't fall into homelessness have is a safety net network of family and friends. Not everybody has that. But the idea, if I didn't have it, say if I was in another city and that happened, I'd be absolutely terrified, which is why I understand if somebody is out on the street and we want to condemn them because they've fallen into substance abuse or mental instability, well, heck, I think if I was out on the street for a week, I'd fall into that as well, which is why I think we can't ever, even though LA is fed up with this, we can't ever lose our humanity.
Our humanity is based on the housing that we build for unhoused neighbors, and that's why we have to move with a sense of urgency. Now, I'm hearing him loud and clear because those are the voices of 41,000 people in the city of LA on any given night. And that's why we have to move quickly on building the housing that is critical. That is the first and most gargantuan step that we need to take collectively as a city. It does include, you know, the President of the United States and members of Congress and the governor and county board of supervisors and mayors, as well as city council members and faith-based leaders and community activists, you know, working together collectively. But if we're going to put a huge, make a huge impact on this issue, we have to deal with the issue of housing and move with a sense of urgency. Everything else, is, I think, is just chatter at the end of the day.
So 6 o'clock, where do you go?
Well, 6 o'clock, if you have no housing, you have nowhere to go. So that's why they get on metro bus lines. Mm-hmm. That's why they go into the libraries. That's why they go into our parks. That's why they just walk all over the place. Or that's why they just sit, you know, on the sidewalk or in the alleyway in their tent the whole day and the whole evening. And that's not humane. It's not good for the city. It leaves us with a profound and indelible mark of shame. And for example, at the very least, what I've done for City 14 is what I want to do for the entire city of Los Angeles.
Gina.
So when we return to being a community of care, I envision that each neighborhood will have some kind of drop-in center for folks who are falling into that kind of trap. So, because you're right now at 6 o'clock at night when there's nowhere to sleep, if you can't call some people and dial for dollars to get a motel room, what are you going to do? The city has absolutely no solution for that right now. Me, myself, it's just like Karen, I would go to my safety network, you know. I know plenty of people who started in their car, but they had so many tickets, their car's been towed now. Geez. So they don't have a car anymore. I know Theo Henderson tells the most amazing story about when he first realized he had to sleep on the street. He just kept walking because he was so afraid. He didn't know where to lay himself down. He literally walked for 2 days until he couldn't walk any longer. And we need to be a community of care. We need to have resources for people so that if somebody in your neighborhood sees somebody struggling like that, somebody actually cares enough to say, hey, just 3 blocks over, there's a drop-in center for you. We've normalized it so much that we walk by people sleeping on the street. We don't look back. We don't check out and see if they're okay. I mean, when did this become our normal? And I would like to see us change as a society, one that cares for one another.
It became normal decades ago.
Yeah.
A community of care, I think that's the best way to end this on. That's all the time we have for this conversation. A big thanks to our three candidates are here, Gina Viola, Kevin DeLeon, and Karen Bass. Round of applause. Thank you so much for being here.
You've been listening to a special rebroadcast of a live debate between three of the candidates to be the next mayor of Los Angeles. The forum was hosted by KCRW's Anna Scott and Gustavo Arellano of the Los Angeles Times. Make sure to check out KCRW.com for more voter information about the primary election. And remember, the last day to vote is Election Day, June 7th. I'm Madeline Brand. I'll see you tomorrow.